the one of the women in the film, the several people who are featured in the film were present at the conference. And one woman answered the question, somebody asked if it would be harder or easier for lesbians than it is for gay men, given that men are in general more visible. And she answered that question that she believed it was probably harder for lesbians since women are already more oppressed. On women, there is even more pressure to get married. And she described in the film her coming out experience to her family, which was done involuntarily. She came out originally just to her brother, who then, about 6 or 5 months later, decided to tell without talking to her or consulting her, her other brothers, her uncles, and her parents. He thought that this was his right, that it was the family's right. It wasn't her personal life anymore, but she decided she needed to face them. Then one of her older brothers physically came after her. He wanted to choke me, she says. My other brothers had to come and take him off me. And consequently, all her brothers completely isolated, did not allow her to be around anymore. They did not allow her to talk to her nieces anymore. So for her, there actually was a physical threat coming from the family, and then was following that complete isolation from them. And she was very devoted to her family. The other thing that is impressive about the film that it shows the diversity of Middle Eastern communities. In the religious aspect of it, there is Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Baha'i women and men featured, and also nationality. There's an Armenian woman, there's a North African man, there's Iranian women. So one of the stereotypes that I think is very common in the United States about people from the Middle East is that they're somehow all the same. And this film definitely takes care of that too and addresses the multiple identities. The film also shows some of the positive role models. There's parents that are interviewed in the film and who support their children, who describe their struggle after initially finding out, but then worked their way through it and are now supportive of their children and, you know, speak out against stigmatizing lesbians and gays. The I Exist will show that there is no contradiction between being gay and being Middle Eastern, and that there doesn't have to be a trade-off between an ethnic identity and a sexual orientation. People in Portland who are hoping to bring this film to Portland in February after it has been officially released. So keep your eyes open. It's definitely a film worthwhile showing. And if you want more information about it, you can go to the web, www.ibite.com. And iBite is EYEBITE.com. I had the fortune to meet a lady at the conference who is, she's well known, but her son was also well known. She was Safis Shafai's mother, and he was the probably first Iranian gay man who wrote. He was a good writer, and he wrote quite publicly about that issue, about homophobia in the Iranian community and being gay or lesbian in the Iranian community. Her name is Maheen. She, I want people to visualize, this is quite an elderly lady. I think she must be in her 70s. She's very traditional, small lady. And she, I believe, has become the surrogate mother to a lot of the young people who were at this conference who are not able to talk to their own families anymore. Like the woman I just described being attacked by her brothers, she described how she called this lady while she was struggling with how to come out to her family. And this lady shared with me that when I asked her how she got involved with this, it's obviously because of her son, but she also just simply said, well, I have to use my time on this earth. While I'm here, I have to be of use, and this is what I decided to do. She became an activist with PFLAC and is very outspoken against homophobia, and I found that tremendously impressive. There's also, I want to read something, a story of another mother who's, I believe, also quite elderly. Here goes. The year after the revolution, I had my second son, Nosheen. By the time he was three, he was already playing with girls' toys and putting on my makeup and my underwear. He wanted to play hopscotch with the girls and refused to play soccer with the boys. He hated boys' games. Worried, I took him to a psychiatrist who said that Nosheen just needed more exposure to his father. That would take care of everything, the psychiatrist said. However, by the time Nosheen was 15 or 16, the depth of his difference was more obvious, even if he didn't know what it meant. It was the way he talked, his demeanor, how he moved in a feminine kind of way. He was suspected of being a homosexual. In Iran, that is a crime punishable by death. The moral police drive around in these big vans, arresting women who are not wearing their head covers right, or boys who wear tight clothes. The police kept going until they filled their vans. Nosheen was arrested a couple of times. The first time they let him go after a while. The second time my husband had to go get him. He had fainted in the holding cell. There were also problems at school. Nosheen was attending a religious school because in Iran, the more religious the school, the better it is. More funding, better resources. There was a certain level of constant harassment from other students. Once classmates assaulted him. The school administration also gave him a hard time. Nosheen began to refuse to go to school and wanted to stay home. Finally, ended up in the night school, finishing high school there with adults. Islam is a religion of compassion. In Iran, we don't torture people with cerebral palsy, so I do not understand why there is no compassion for people like Nosheen, who are different through no fault of their own. I also do not understand why people, they are willfully kept ignorant, therefore intolerant. The blame is on the government. Before the revolution, there was at least some discussion of these issues. Religious fundamentalism is bad for everyone. Regardless of religion, it's a shameful phenomenon. How can you believe people are going to hell if they're not Muslims? I was born a Muslim just by chance. Had I been born in England or America, I probably would be Christian. Would I be going to hell? It doesn't make sense. If being a religious person means keeping all the rules of the Quran, I'm not a religious person. However, I try to help other people. I try to be a good person, not lie, cheat, and steal, and so on. I think that should be enough. I'm religious in my own way. After the problems with the police and the school, Nosheen was in turmoil and started seeing a psychiatrist again. 7 months later, the psychiatrist called my husband and me, told us that Nosheen was transsexual. At first, we didn't even understand what that meant. We thought the solution would be psychological, that the mind would change to fit the body. Instead, the solution was to change the body to fit the mind. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, lesbians and gay men risk the death penalty. Sex change surgery for transsexuals is legal, but the recommended year of transition is skipped because until the surgery is complete, you're considered criminally homosexual. This puts tremendous pressure on transgender people to have the surgery, whether they want it or not. There is an additional cultural pressure in Iran because, like in Argentina, it is a big fan of elective surgery. A few years ago, a U.S.-trained doctor successfully pushed hysterectomies in Iran. The word devastated is not strong enough to describe my state. I thought the world was coming to an end. I'm not exaggerating. I even thought about killing myself. I agonized about Nosheen's future. I worried that people might want to hurt or even kill her. And I worried about how to tell the rest of the family. It took my husband and I for 4 months to come to terms with the fact that Nosheen was transsexual. In the meantime, Nosheen was so frustrated that we're not doing anything to help her, she tried to commit suicide. Finally, it was me that decided to leave the country with Nosheen. It wasn't easy. Remember, I did not leave 20 years ago when so many did, even though I lost my job because there was an attempt to get rid of women in jobs. We both stayed and tried to preserve because we wanted to do something for our country. I know that Iran has other problems and needs, like literacy, jobs, and development. But when I saw what my country did to try did not try to help my child, I left. I couldn't wait around for all the other problems to be solved before I could take care of my child. She was getting arrested, and I did not know what they would do to her next. Who would be accountable if my child was executed? Before all this happened, I was very reserved, a very private person. I never criticized the government or any of my colleagues. I'm not in any way a radical, but when it became a matter of life or death for my child, I had to change. Now I want to do something for others, to get people talking about gender issues. We are not all fish swimming in the same direction. I want to continue working so that maybe one day parents won't have to be stranded all over the world, separated just to save their children. We don't have to be ashamed. And this lady is now an activist with PFLAG. So why don't we take a musical break and we go on then. Hello again. We're still talking about homosexuality in Iranian and Middle Eastern communities, and this is following a conference that I had the privilege to attend. At that conference, one of the topics that was discussed a lot, well, not a lot, but was discussed, is the whole question about why is somebody gay or lesbian, and is it choice or is it nature? And I've heard that discussion almost everywhere the topic ever came up, and to me, who knows? There's all kinds of research proving one or the other, and I guess finally it doesn't matter a whole lot. What I would like to see more research done on is why people become so homophobic. And in my experience, this issue really brings out the worst in people, that people who may already struggle with other issues around diversity really cannot handle accepting gay, lesbian, or transgender, or bi people. And I seriously wonder what the story is with that. Why is this such a threat? What are people afraid of? You know, I have an accent. I'm from Germany. And of course, in Nazi Germany, homosexuals were among the first who were gathered and sent to concentration camp. The law that was applied for that was kept long after the war. It was still in effect, which was one of the reasons why gays and lesbians in Germany did never apply it for any kind of financial or other acknowledgement of what they had been through. And this is an excerpt from the statement of the Nazi Party. Manhood is maintained only if discipline is exercised, especially in the matters of love. Lack of discipline is free love without constraint. Therefore, we reject it as if we reject everything that harms the nation. Whoever thinks about love between men and men and women is our enemy. We reject everything that makes our nation unmanly and allows it to become a play ball in the hands of our enemies, because we know that living is fighting and that it is madness to think that humans will someday join arms in brotherly love. Natural history teaches us otherwise. So this was all about manliness, but also about being conformed to the group norm, that the issues of homosexuality was used, I believe, as one tool to frighten people. It seems that actually one of the most important functions of the persecution and punishment of gays is to establish examples. With these examples, it is demonstrated that what happens to somebody who stands up for his personal interests or lifestyle or needs or preferences, when it is against or not the same as the mainstream society of conduct, they will be punished. The treatment is more effective when it's applied to seemingly very private human needs, and it is easier to persecute certain people when there is nobody to defend them. The punishment for living private needs is meant to teach that it is dangerous, even life-threatening, to stand up for one's interests. What is true for intimate sexual and lifestyle needs may be even truer for pursuing interests in society as a whole, such as political struggles. And I'm quoting liberally from a paper by Guras Ekdedali. Fundamentalism, of course, the word is always used for one religion only. And I think we tend to forget, for example, that we live in a society right now, in a time right now, where fundamentalism, religious Christian right fundamentalism, is definitely on the upswing. And I believe fundamentalism very much operates in this black and white rigid thinking that does not value diversity and then uses private matters as a way to keep people in line by giving out the clear message that this is not allowable. And I think another reason homophobia is so common, another reason people are so afraid of that issue, is because it questions gender roles. You know, like I just read the statement from the Nazi Party about the manhood cult, and women at the same time were considered to be child bearers. That was their primary function, was to be mothers. So if all of a sudden these gender boxes aren't so clear cut anymore and are questioned, I believe many people find that threatening. And that's why I think they become homophobes. I think it's rarely ever about the actual people who are being persecuted. It's more about the people who are doing it. It's something in them and maybe in the society that they're trying to establish that makes them be homophobic. And I actually would love to see more research done on that, what it really is that makes people so afraid and so hateful, because I don't think we have any good answers for that. Okay, since I mentioned it earlier, I would like to also end on a positive note and actually play a poem by Rumi. It's a long poem. And Rumi, of course, a lot of has been speculated about his beloved. A lot of poems by Jalaluddin Mulavi Rumi are about a beloved. And it can be interpreted as a spiritual beloved. It also can and often has been interpreted as love poems to Tabrizi, who was, as many people believe, his partner, who eventually disappeared. So this particular translation is by Nader Khalihi, and there's a million translations, some good and some not so good. So let's listen to some Rumi.
Rebellious I feel again. I swear I can tear every chain you wrap around me. I'm that crazy, fastened fellow who cages mountains by his magical tongue. I don't want this mortal life. I don't desire this mortal soul. You are my life. You are my soul. You are my love. That's who I want. That's who I want. When you hide away, I feel darkness in my faith, and when you appear, I'm filled with grace. If I drank from this jar, it's because of your reflection, and if I breathe without you, I regret it for the rest of my life. Without you, I swear, even if I fly, I'm sad as a dark cloud. Without you, even in a rose garden, I feel in prison, I swear again. The music to my ear is only your name. The dance of my soul is only with your wine. Please come again and reconstruct this house of mine. This is my existence. Going to an abbey or going to a mosque, I'm only there in search of you. I'm only there in search of you. Running and leaping nonstop till I catch up with the fastest rider. Annihilating forever, vanishing for good till I reach the soul of the world. Very happy I've become ever since I changed to a piece of fire. Very happy I've become ever since I changed to a piece of fire. And with this fire, I'll burn my house and dwell in the desert. I'll soften and humble. I'll change to earth till I grow your flowers in me. I'll crawl and flow. I'll change myself to water till I can reach your paradise garden. Without pain, no healer will tend me or give me potions. I'll change to total pain till I get total healing. Without pain, no healer will tend me or give me potions. I'll change to total pain till I get total healing. Ever since I was born, I was thrown into this world, helpless and shivering like a speck of dust in the air. But as soon as I reach the end of this journey and settle down, I'll be secured and tranquil forever. I'll be secured and tranquil. Every moment, a voice out of this world calls on our soul to awake and rise every moment. This soul of ours is like a flame with more smoke than light, blackening our vision, letting no light through. Lessen the smoke, and more light brightens your house. The house you dwell in now, and the abode you'll eventually move into. Lessen the smoke, and more light brightens your house. Now, my precious soul, how long are you going to waste yourself in this wandering journey? Can't you hear the voice? Can't you use your swifter wings and answer the call?
So this was an offering by Jalaluddin Mulavi Rumi, hopefully in the celebration of light and in the celebration of love and its many different manifestations. And maybe we can all concentrate a little bit more of on fighting those who hate and make war rather than those who love people. I want to make a few announcements. If you have any questions about this program, we'll be here for a couple more minutes. You can call the studio at 231-8187 and just leave your name and number and I will be happy to call you back and give you information. And I don't care who you are and what your name is, but if you have questions or want some resources, 231-8187. You can go on the web, and I'm not going to spell out the web addresses, but one good resource, if you just type it in, you'll find it. It's the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. It's one organization. Then, of course, Parents and Friends of Lesbian and Gays, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and Al-Fatiha Foundation is a Muslim gay and lesbian organization. And of course, the woman I interviewed was from Homan LA, which is Homan, H-O-M-A-N-L-A.org. I also want to make an announcement. since I was talking about Iran, an Iranian woman just won the Nobel Peace Prize, and there is an event to honor her on Tuesday, December 9th at 7:30 at Lewis and Clark in the chapel. This is to honor Shirin Ebadi, an Iranian lawyer who just won the Nobel Peace Prize. This was Bread and Roses on KBO 19.7 FM. I hope everybody's keeping everybody else safe, and we watch out for each other and support each other. Thank you for listening.